My message today is entitled Compassion, Happiness, and Oneness. So several years ago, I ran across a story that for some reason stopped me in my tracks. As a matter of fact, it's a story that to this day I still think about from time to time. Technically, it's a letter from one of the people involved in the story. And I'd like to share that simple story with you and then talk about why it may have struck me so profoundly. The letter read, "Dear waitress at the Frankfort, Kentucky Steak and Shake who served us Saturday night. As a waitress in a 24-hour sit-down fast food restaurant, I'm sure you get a lot of odd requests, especially from harried parents dealing with children in a visually stimulating black and white checkered decor, cold, audibly loud environment. But I have to tell you, you handled our table with grace and calmness that belied the busy dining room. When we ordered a hot dog for our autistic 9-year-old son, Scott, and explained that the mustard must be made in a squiggly line on top of the hot dog, much like you would see in any picture book of a hot dog in any children's book, you didn't even bat an eye. You had no idea that if he had received a hot dog without mustard, or without mustard, not in a squiggly line in such a loud, cold, visually stimulating environment, it would have likely caused a meltdown for which there may have been no immediate recovery. You just nodded, smiled, said you understood, and brought us a perfect hot dog. You made sure that the milkshake had a cherry and brought him a salad with his kids' meal, even though that isn't the norm. You are a fantastic waitress, and we had a meal with no issues. As the mother of a child diagnosed with, quote, autism spectrum disorder manifested by issues in reading and auditory comprehension, issues in interpersonal relationships, and issues in sensory processing with an above-average raw intelligence," end quote, "I can assure you many meals out aren't handled so smoothly, and many waitresses and waiters truly don't have the desire to cater to the odd request of one small family. We had to eat and run in a hurry. We had a meeting about an hour away and only 45 minutes to get there. We left and were halfway to our meeting when Scott realized that he'd left his Joy, capital J, Joy toy on the table. Now, you have no way of knowing this, but the things that are special to Scott are obsessively special to him. And I don't use the term obsessively lightly. Joy is the emotion Joy from the recent movie Inside Out. We watch the previews about 43,000 times a day. His wish list for his birthday this Friday is the entire set of action figures of the emotions from the movie. Right now, he only owns Joy, and she goes everywhere with him, from bed to bath to table to bike. She's in his hand or pocket. There was no meltdown when he realized he'd left Joy. There was more like a off button. His entire body deflated. His face completely fell, and he had no emotion whatsoever. We told him that we'd stop and purchase a new one, and he emotionlessly said he didn't want another one. When we left that meeting at nearly 9 a.m. that night, we called your restaurant. The woman who answered the phone told us that they'd found Joy and had kept her for us. Now, the hour-long drive to your restaurant was probably the longest drive in Scott's life. When we took Scott into the restaurant to get Joy, we found out that she was given a tour of the kitchen and rode in the pockets of as many staff members as possible so she'd get as many experiences as possible before we returned to pick her up. And when you came back to talk to us, you said you had a feeling that she was important to Scott, and you knew that we would come back for her. I cannot come up with the words to express my gratitude for the gentle care you gave our son and his lost toy Saturday night. It would have been easy to ignore the request for the mustard, a salad, a cherry, and just to toss the piece of plastic in the garbage when the table was bust. But you listened. You heard. And you loved him even though you didn't know him. I don't know if you have any idea of the obstacles he's going to face in his lifetime. We don't even know. We're spending his childhood trying to prepare him and teach him coping skills for surviving and thriving in this dark and fallen world. When we receive little bits of light from people like you, it gives us hope for what the future holds. Thank you for the joy you gave us. Now, to be completely honest, I've read that story multiple times, and it still brings joy to me with every single reading. And that's my curiosity off. Why is it that stories like this impact most of us so profoundly? I mean, it's clearly a true story about people who are loving and compassionate, but beyond the obvious feel-good qualities of what is it that connects with us and these kinds of stories so profoundly? I mean, none of us know Scott and his family, nor do we know the staff of that particular Steak and Shake. So why? Why do stories like this connect with us on such an emotive level? I certainly had my suspicions about why, but I was curious to learn more about this condition, which seems to afflict living animals from rats to elephants and even we humans. So, I set out on a brief investigation into the concept of compassion. Now, for this discussion, I'm defining compassion as our capacity to experience the same feelings or emotions that someone else is feeling. Now, honestly, considering that sometimes massive divides that we experience in our own country that frequently come with a hatred of other, it seems to me that the timing of taking a deeper look at compassion couldn't be much better. Closely related to compassion, so closely that they sometimes are almost inseparable, is the idea of empathy. As a matter of fact, Webster's defines empathy as the feeling that you understand and share another person's experiences and emotions. Now, put together these two emotions led me down a path of thought that I believe helps explain why stories about people we don't know can have such a profound impact on us. By the definitions that I just shared about empathy and compassion, when empathizing, when being compassionate, we are literally treating another living being as if it is part of ourselves. Their hopes, their fears, their joys, in some ways, become our own as well. Believe it or not, this actually points to one of the cores of Buddhist teachings on morality. Buddhism teaches that all life is interrelated. The concept is called dependent origination. And it says that nothing exists in isolation. Nothing is independent of other life. In Christianity, the concept of interconnectedness is echoed in Jesus' teaching in the Sermon on the Mount when he says, the sun shines equally on the just and unjust, and the rain falls on the good and the evil. There's even a Japanese term for dependent origination. It's called inji, which literally means arising in relation. In other words, all beings and phenomena exist or occur only because of their relationship with other beings and phenomena. Everything in our world comes into existence in response to causes and conditions. Therefore, none of us can exist in absolute independence of other people and animals. So, consider the implications empathy and compassion have on us when we are trying to achieve happiness. If our feelings are interdependent on the feelings of others, much like many great spiritual teachers have told us, then part of making ourselves happy is making others happy too. One of the more interesting ways this impacts our personal happiness is in how it alters our relationships. The interconnectedness of humanity, the interconnectedness of creation, tells us that we all exist in relationship to each other, which means with each person we experience, we have the opportunity to develop personally as a compassionate being. When we recognize the reality of interconnectedness and the importance of compassion, every relationship we experience, good or bad, becomes an opportunity for personal growth, which I would argue puts us that much closer to experiencing a more expansive happiness in our own lives. Another way that compassion and the way it points to our interconnectedness can expand our personal happiness is simply in the recognition that we are connected to every living being. The more compassion we express, the more we recognize the reality of interconnectedness. And the more we recognize it, the less likely we are to feel lonely and isolated. Ultimately, this way of seeing the world helps pull us out of the ego-centered perspectives. It promotes more joy, both personally and on larger scales, all of which can help lead us to a more compassionate world. Or as Buddhist philosopher Daisaku Ikeda says, we're all human beings who, through some mystic bond, were born to share the same limited lifespan on this planet. A small green oasis in a vast universe. Why do we quarrel and victimize one another? If we could all keep the image of the vast heavens in mind, I believe that it would go a long way toward resolving conflicts and disputes. If our eyes are fixed on eternity, we come to realize that the conflicts of our little egos are really sad and unimportant. In the story that I opened with, Scott lost his joy with a capital J. And the compassion of others reconnected him with it. Every moment, every relationship, every time we feel a compassionate tug on our heartstrings, we have the opportunity to not only help others reconnect with their joy, but ourselves as well. And I, for one, can think of few better reasons to live a more compassionate life. This is your chance to respond to the themes and the message of today. So, are there those who would like to share thoughts with your spiritual community who's gathered here? Everybody acting like they're shy.
Well, thank you, Mark. I enjoyed the story and cried a little bit when it was over. But I think that your message is really an important one, because I think our general culture is very much moving in the direction of everybody for himself.
Yeah.
And so I got mine. Sorry
right.
about you.
Sadly, it's very true. Yeah.
So I think that the people who are proposing, you know, that it's wonderful to be an individual and do things just for myself are forgetting, I think, your message that.
Well, and it's one of the core myths of the U.S. It's this rugged individualism. Yeah. Which runs against everything that creation seems to teach us.
Yeah. I mean, but we also have stories of, you know, immigrants or groups where the people are grown up in that compassion, but then somebody wants to get ahead,
mm-hmm.
and so they go get an education and they go away, and they don't give back.
Right. So. Thanks for sharing that, David. Good. Are there others, thoughts they'd like to share? Not in Gracia. Turn it back to you.